before release, I was getting around maybe like 30-ish concurrent viewers, 30 to 50-ish. And then upon release, I jumped up and I think I maxed out at over 3,000 at one point. It was overnight in terms of the explosion, but it wasn't overnight in terms of the work because I had like built up to it.
Preparing for this for two years at this point.
Yeah. My goal was just to be like, if you type in Spellbreak, you find me. If you type in Spellbreak gameplay, you find me. If you type in Spellbreak classes, you find me. No matter what you search, you're going to find me. And that was kind of my goal throughout the 2 years of making videos, and being able to see the different releases coming in the distance was like, okay, well, this is when it's going to spike up, is when they do this, and then they do that and it would spike up a little bit, and then I'd be like, okay, well, beta 2 is coming, so it's going to spike up then again. And then it went from beta 1 to beta 2 and got another big bump, and then it was going from beta 2 into full release, and I was like, this is basically what I've been working towards for the last year and a half, and I'm going to put everything into it at this point, because full release was just what I was working towards, right? You're when I'm building all this up, it's like when the game releases, it's going to be the biggest explosion yet. And so I just buckled down and was like, I know what content I need to make, and buckled down and made all the guides, all the things that I knew people would search for out of the gate, and dropped all of those right before release. And then when release hit, it was a huge spike. I went from Fortnite, where I was getting one viewer, to Spellbreak, and I realized between the switch that I should not be playing oversaturated games, especially if I'm not making YouTube content consistently for it, that I need to find something that's on its way up, and I need to grow with the game. If you're going into the biggest games, you're competing with the biggest creators, which when you're a one viewer person, unless you're doing something very drastically different or have some way to bring in a wave of people to push you to the top of the list, you're not gonna be able to do anything. I don't think there's ever going to be another streamer that's going to blow up from just streaming, unless they do something really big, like having some type of show or something very, very unique. If you're trying to sit down and play video games and hit start streaming, that in my mind is not productive in terms of reaching your goals. Twitch has always been kind of the cherry on top for me. And I think that's how it needs to be for most people. I think you need to go in and realize that you need to be building everything to push towards your Twitch, because nothing else is going to push towards your Twitch unless you build things to do it.
Marcus, welcome to the Becoming a Streamer podcast. It's great to have you on. It was actually a community member that was like, we need to get Marcus on the show. You've had a journey for a while in the space. And one of the things that the tweets that I recognized you put out was, I've been waiting for this, or waiting to catch this wave for a while. This was like back last year, and I was like, that's so fitting. And it's really good advice and perspective, I think, for someone who's been in the game for a while. So thank you for coming on. Really appreciate you sharing your story.
I appreciate you having me, man.
So can you expand on that tweet a little bit? Like, what does that mean? Is it?
So I've been playing Spellbreak which is my main game at the moment, for a little over 2 years now. It was under NDA when I started, and I saw potential in it. That's the whole reason I switched to it. I actually wasn't a huge fan of the game out of the gate, or just based off seeing videos on it, and my friend kind of pushed me to it, and I tried it and fell in love with the game, and then was just like, okay, I'm gonna start just building up content. And I had a good amount of videos ready to drop when the NDA dropped, and then have been posting since February of 2019, all Spellbreak stuff, essentially. And I just saw massive potential in the game, and I've just been building up my resume, sort of, and trying to, especially on YouTube, trying to take over as many search terms as I can. So if you go on YouTube, my goal was just to be like, if you type in Spellbreak, you find me. If you type in Spellbreak gameplay, you find me. If you type in Spellbreak classes, you find me. No matter what you search, you're going to find me. And that was kind of my goal throughout the 2 years of making videos.
Well, I want to get into that, but your journey didn't start there in 2019. Your journey started long before that. I think it'd be helpful just for those that are listening is give them a sense of where you are now. Like, where are you creating content now? How often are you creating content? Is this your full-time role right now?
Yeah, so I went full-time in September. I've been creating content since I think like 2009-ish. It was back in for Call of Duty 4 was when I started originally. So I've been creating content since then and took a little bit of a break. And now I have gone full time. I post videos daily. I stream Monday through Friday. And then sometimes on weekends, I leave them open and I tend to go and stream on weekends anyway. But I say I don't normally do weekends, but I really stream basically every day and do YouTube every day as well.
Cool. Well, that's super helpful. And also just the time you've been in the space. One of the things we like to do on the show is wind the clock back a little bit. So young Marcus, where did young Marcus grow up?
I'm from California. We're outside of San Francisco. It's sort of a small town, but basically, yeah, it's just small town, not a whole lot, and spent most of my time indoors playing video games. So this was a natural path.
What was your favorite game growing up?
Ooh, there's so many good ones. I think my first like original like single player game was Fable. The original Fable I beat probably 15 times. And then I got into online gaming, playing as a second player on my brother's Xbox, playing Halo. And then once I got my own Xbox, I kind of got into like Gears of War and other online games. And I've just been into PvP shooters since, for as long as I can remember, basically.
Predominantly console?
Yes, back then. Now, I don't think I'll ever go back to console since I switched to computer. It's just, I just love it. I can't use a controller anymore. I have to play keyboard and mouse. So I think I'll mainly stick to computer now. And maybe do some console stuff if I'm playing like racing games or something like that where I need to like feather the triggers. But for anything aim based, I just have learned keyboard and mouse, and I think I'm gonna stick with it.
It's such an advantage. It really is. I did a little dip in console early on, but I've been on PC now since I was a kid, pretty much. And I just love PC, the accuracy. And there's a lot of listeners I know that are on console. It's just where they're getting their start. But there is a big shift when you go to PC in terms of your ability to compete
at
the highest level.
Yeah, it's not only is it just, it feels just like more of a natural input as well compared to controller, but having the extra frames and being able, just having all the extra settings within the games make it just give you that extra advantage for sure.
So coming back to your college, or back to your teenage years, was that when you were getting into Gears of War, etc.? You've got your own Xbox at this point, and this is pre-school. Did you have a job? Did you go to school?
Yeah. So I graduated high school. I took a year off, and during that year is actually when I stopped content creating, or towards the end of high school. And I kind of just did my own thing and started getting back into gaming. And throughout community college, I was going for a computer science degree and was just always streaming. No matter what, I was just playing games with my friends and streaming constantly.
So I want to dig into that. So you said, did you stop making content?
Yeah.
Before or after school, you stopped making content, take that year off. Let's wind the clock then. Like, when did you start making content? How did you start making content?
How did I start making content? So the original game I made content on was Call of Duty 4. If you were back in the content space back then, you probably knew M40A3 Predator or Optic Predator. He's my best friend in real life. And he actually stumbled across Zergriz's videos, who is like the original Call of Duty montage maker. And my friend was just like, hey, I want to start making videos. And I was kind of like, okay, I'll join you. And then my friend, he's just a generous person. We went to Best Buy. He bought us both capture cards. And back then it was Dazzle. So it was a very standard definition, kind of janky version, especially compared to what it is now. And throughout that, we progressed we started the M40A3 team in Call of Duty 4. And then he got into Optic and I got into Optic. And we were both on the YouTube side. This is before Optic was really a competitive organization. It was mostly, almost completely YouTube side. And
so how did you even get into that? Like, how did you, I mean, a lot of listeners are like trying to get their, you know, in to the space. Like, how did you even get into Optic? Was your content like doing really well on YouTube? How did you bridge that gap?
Yeah, so M40 was a huge team, not a huge team, but it was a pretty big team on its own. And so what sort of ended up happening was once they took Predator from M40, there was just so many members who were getting pulled from M40 into Optic to make content for them. And I think our just team was on the map. I was getting a good amount of views per video. I think we were getting like between 20 to 50,000 views per montage.
And that's a lot of views. I mean, for just starting your content creation journey, did you expect that in the beginning?
No, not at all. We didn't expect anything in the beginning, really. We just were posting videos just to post videos, and we happened to kind of catch the Call of Duty wave. The Modern Warfare 2 wave was really what blew everybody up that was making Call of Duty videos. And
how long from your like first video on YouTube to like, shit, this is working?
Maybe it was so long ago, maybe a year and a half. And back.
Okay, so you did put in some time. There was like definitely a grind that was happening before you got that, like, this is working.
Sort of. I wouldn't necessarily consider it a grind. We were just kind of making videos loosely. And it's not like I put out a lot of videos. I probably had less than 30. But it was just, there was no competition in the space back then. So it was very easy to be found on YouTube. And that was back when montages were like the big thing. Because right now, if you post a montage, it's kind of like looked over, it seems to be. And back then, it was really the only videos that were being watched. And then they kind of gradually went into live commentaries, or you'd get like a gameplay and you'd record a commentary over it, and has transitioned into kind of where it is now from there.
So you started getting these views. Did that then make you take it more seriously? Like you said, you were like pretty inconsistent. You were doing it every now and then, but when you started getting like the 30K views, etc., was that when you were like, oh, like this is something I need to take more seriously? Or were you so busy with real life?
I was sort of taking it more seriously. Back then, there really wasn't any career opportunities with those kind of views. I was not making almost any money. I think I was making maybe like $1 to $2 per thousand views. So it's like if I posted a video, I would make maybe like $50 to $100 off of it. And we were only posting videos maybe once every couple of weeks, because to make montages, you have to stack up clips, and that takes a long time. And then the editing process also takes a long time. So it's not stuff that I could really pump out quickly. So it wasn't like I saw it as a career opportunity. And once I did actually see it as a career opportunity, I think that is what killed my interest in making videos back then. That's what made me stop.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So I started taking it more seriously, and I'm like, okay, I got to post daily. I got to get gameplays. I got to do all this. And putting all that pressure on myself was kind of just, I was falling off in general, just with my interest in Call of Duty and going for clips, because it kind of turned into, hey, let's spawn trap everybody and not set up the same clips, but every single clip looked exactly the same at that point, and I was just getting bored with it. And then it was actually on Thanksgiving one year, my Xbox account got hacked, and that kind of pushed me away. And then I just was getting more and more stuff pushing me away from the scene, and kind of wanted to do real life stuff at the same time, you know, just like teenager stuff, wanting to go out, wanting to meet people and hang out, and then dropped off. And kind of just, I honestly completely dropped it, and then came back. I don't remember exactly what year I came back. I believe
this is pre-college.
This is in the middle of college, I believe. So
so you went to school for CompSci. Why did you go to school for CompSci?
I wanted to get into game development mostly, but I thought, well, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. But I figured I've loved video games forever. I wanted to get into game development. And then if that fell off and I lost my interest in that, I would be able to transition it. And there was lots of options with CompSci. So that was the main
reason. So you went to school. I'm sure your parents were like, this is great. He's doing something responsible. He's going he's got the conventional path. Mm-hmm. Did you stick it out in college?
I am one class away from my associate's in computer science.
So you didn't finish it?
I didn't. No, I didn't even get the associate's is since I went to community college, you get your associates and then you transfer to a larger college and then you go for another 2 years to get your bachelor. So I might go back because I stopped completely in September to go full time. So I may go back and just try to get that one class done just to, because I put in like 8 years of work and figuring out what I wanted to do and taking a bunch of classes. So I might go back and do that just so I have something to show for all the work that I put in. And then
I dropped it, for what it's worth. I did comp sci and I dropped out.
Yeah.
As well. And it worked out okay. So I think, yeah, you don't want to pass up the opportunity to get it, but it's not a necessity to have that degree.
Yeah, I agree.
And you're living proof of that right now, right? You're getting to make content for a living at the moment.
Yep, yep. For right now, I'm trying to transition into making sure that it's more stable as of right now. It's so fresh right now. We kind of had a big blow up in September. And I've just been kind of writing.
I don't want to cover that too much because I want to track a little bit, like from college to getting back into content, because you quit content at this point. And what called you back?
Just video games. Just, I've never really lost my interest in making content, and I always wanted to get into streaming. But back when I was making YouTube videos and doing well with them, streaming wasn't really a thing. I was actually started streaming on Justin TV, which was the original Twitch. So they just changed their name to Twitch and went full gaming focused, where Justin TV was just a bunch of random stream stuff. Like people would stream themselves just living in their house. And it was like a lot of weird stuff like that. And then back then it was also a really big struggle to get into streaming because there was no easy programs to use. You would basically have to, especially from console, you'd have to use your preview window on your PC and you'd have to capture a portion of your PC screen, which was the preview window. And then from there, you'd have to use that to stream from. And then you'd have to sync up your mic. And it was just, there's like 100 different steps and hoops that you had to jump through to even get the stream working, especially from console. And it was rough, so I kind of stuck to YouTube and was kind of dabbling in streaming. And once I never really quit video games, but once I got more into video games again, I was just like, well, I want to stream. And I just decided I'm just going to stream always. If I'm playing a video game, I'm always going to be streaming.
How was those first streams? Did you have any expectation? Like, I want them to do well. Were you comfortable? Because like doing VOD content is very different from live content. How was that experience for you?
I was pretty comfortable. I didn't really expect a whole lot. I was still putting out a few YouTube videos and stuff like that, and it was more for fun and just kind of a learning process. As far as feeling comfortable, I think I've always felt more comfortable in front of a camera than kind of anywhere else. Like having a one-on-one talking to my camera was kind of like my outlet in high school. So if I had anything to talk to, like those live commentaries where I'd get a gameplay and I'd just sit down and talk into my microphone and throw them over the gameplay, that was kind of like, it was a big outlet for me. And so that's always been a comfortable space for me, and I've never really felt any uncomfortability in front of a camera.
When you first had when you were going live, what was your viewership like? Because you had this, like, you know, moderate success already on some of your YouTube content. Did some of that parlay over onto your streaming site, or was it like you're kind of starting afresh and it was a slow start?
So when I originally started streaming, it was when I was still making YouTube content. It was before I dropped off completely. And so I don't remember the exact viewership. I actually wish I could go back and look at those analytics, but it's not even a website anymore. So I have no idea what my viewership was like, but I remember being able to see chat and having people interacting. So it was probably at least a good, I'd probably say between like 20 to 100 people possibly. But I mean, when I'm switching from getting 50,000 views a video to having 100 people watching, the numbers difference felt like I really wasn't getting any viewership when 20 to 100 people in your stream is quite a bit of people.
Was that a bit of a gut punch? Did you feel like, oh, wow, I'm not as big? Or were you like, no, I'm having fun. This is totally cool.
I was having fun with it. And I definitely didn't take it as serious as I did making YouTube content, but I was still having fun with it and just doing what I felt was fun at the time. So I wouldn't stream constantly. I'd just stream whenever I felt like it. And it got to that point to where it was, there's so many different hoops I had to jump through, like I was saying, to get everything set up, that I kind of fell off of streaming and went back to mostly YouTube again.
Were you, did you have to balance any work like during this time or school at this, like throughout this time?
Yeah. So I was in, when I first started, I believe I was in high school through the majority of my Call of Duty content creation. And then I think it was maybe senior year when I completely stopped, or like the very end of senior year. But so, yeah, I was balancing school and then I was working just a part time job at, we have like this gym, like basically right next to our house. So I just walked down and would work there for like 4 or 5 hours, and then was also making just that small bit of money from content. So I wasn't really like, I wasn't struggling for money necessarily, and my parents were really supportive. So that definitely helped. And so I had to balance it a little bit, but not as much as some other people may have had to.
And how long ago was this? Because how old are you now?
I'm 27.
Marcus? So when you came out of, you came out of uni recently. So you were still in, you were in school recently?
Yeah, in September was when I stopped.
So the stream's picking up. What made you decide, like, at what point were you like, I can justify going more into this? Into the streaming side,
as far as going full time, that was when, the day that Spellbreak dropped, I knew coming up to it the channel had slowly built and built, and I was catching every wave of Spellbreak. So like I said, there was an NDA, and then once the NDA dropped, I started posting videos, and I was posting a couple times a week, and I just continued that. And then it went from alpha into beta, and then got a pretty big bump in my graph there, and my numbers went up, and then it went from beta 1 to beta 2 and got another big bump, and then it was going from beta 2 into full release, and I was like, this is going, this is basically what I've been working towards for the last year and a half, and I'm going to put everything into it at this point, because full release was just what I was working towards, right? You're when I'm building all this up, it's like when the game releases, it's going to be the biggest explosion yet. So I hadn't necessarily dropped out completely at the start of the game. It dropped on September 3rd. And I think I like worked the day before. I've actually worked for my dad for a little bit. So it's very, very lenient.
And was he supportive in that idea of dropping out?
Yeah. Yeah. He was supportive.
That's one of the things I always wonder, like, the people around you, like, do they get it? Like, do they get what you're trying to do?
No, but they're supportive. they're as supportive as they can be.
That's awesome. It's good that you have that, because some people don't even get that. There's like a lot of like, I just don't get this. I'm not interesting. I don't know why you do this. But it's good that they're at least encouraging you to do something that you're passionate about on that side. Mm-hmm. When you have, when you started the Spellbreak content back in November in 2019, what was your viewership like, and how was it starting to grow? Like, just from a, like a concurrent viewers side on the streaming side.
So before release, I was getting around maybe like 30-ish concurrent viewers, 30 to 50-ish. And then upon release, I jumped up and I think I maxed out at over 3,000 at one point. And that was with a raid. And I think without a raid, it was a little over 2,000.
That is epic.
Yeah, it was really an over, it was overnight in terms of the explosion, but it wasn't overnight in terms of the work, because I had like built up to it.
Preparing for this for two years at this point.
Yeah.
Was it a linear progression? Like, you know, each release you were going from 30 and then it was like, I've got 100 and then it was like 200, or was it like just a sudden spike from kind of consistently at the 50 to 100 range and then release?
So it went from, I probably had like 2 to 5 viewers for a long time. The Spellbreak community is really supportive of basically everybody in it. So everybody's in everybody's streams. So we kind of jumped around between like 5 to 10. And then as the game grew, I kind of grew with it. And so it went from like 5 to what, after it went from like alpha into beta, it went from like 5 to 15. And then when it went from beta to beta 2, it went from like 15 to like between 30 to 50 concurrents. And the game actually went offline for, I believe it was 2 months between beta 2 and release. And so I just buckled down and was like, I know what content I need to make and buckled down and made all the guides, all the things that I knew people would search for out of the gate, and dropped all of those right before release. And then when release hit, it was a huge spike, and it's dropped down quite a bit since then, but it's starting to climb again. And I don't think the potential has been hit for the game yet, essentially.
So it's a really good insight, I think, for those listening is, how did you have the foresight? Because Spellbreak's a good game, but how did you know back then that it was going to be a good game? Because a lot of new content creators can be like, oh, I'm just going to play COD because it's like the most watched game, or like some of the like League or Fortnite, whatever it is, I'm just going to play that game. But you were like, no, I'm going to focus in on this niche and I'm going to take a bet on this brand new game that's not proven yet. How did you have so much conviction in that?
Well, it was I went from Fortnite, where I was getting one viewer, to Spellbreak. And I realized between the switch that I should not be playing oversaturated games, especially if I'm not making YouTube content consistently for it, that I need to find something that's on its way up and I need to grow with the game. As far as buckling down and going into one game, I don't think it was probably my smartest idea. Honestly, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it unless you're really, really adamant that you think the game's going to be successful. But at this point, I'm sort of trying to build my way to where if I transfer to another game, I can still continue my career as a content creator. So I felt it, and then I saw the growth immediately when I switched, and the support of the community as soon as I switched, and just kind of knew that I was going to keep growing with it, and being able to see the different releases coming in the distance was like, okay, well, this is when it's going to spike up, is when they do this, and then they do that and it would spike up a little bit, and then I'd be like, okay, well, beta 2 is coming, so it's going to spike up then again. And I could
was
see
that,
the
was
dates.
That a function of you like deciding to go to Spellbreak? Was it like, I just wanted to try something different because Fortnite's obviously not working, and it didn't matter if it was Spellbreak or something else, you just tried something else and then you seen that it worked and that gave you the conviction? Or was it something about the developers or like their commitment to the game or like the game itself that you loved?
I actually, it was Predator again who brought me the game and showed it to me, and it wasn't, he was excited about it and I really wasn't, and we have these talks where I'll sit down with a lot of my content friends and just kind of talk about making content. And I had been making Fortnite content for over a year and saw no growth. And so he pushed me into being like, hey, you should try out smaller games and see if you can compete there. Because you're basically, if you're going into the biggest games, you're competing with the biggest creators, which when you're a one viewer person, unless you're doing something very drastically different or have some way to bring in a wave of people to push you to the top of the list, you're not going to be able to do anything in those arenas, I guess.
Did you have a close relationship with Spellbreak, like the dev team? Were you kind of in the loop there and like getting those NDAs and then being able to like compile footage under NDA, and then when the release came, you were able to bring it more? Like, was there an inherent advantage that working closely with a smaller developer gave you?
No, not necessarily. The entire community was under NDA. When you play the game, you would have to be under NDA. If you started streaming, the community was pretty strict about like, hey, this guy is streaming Spellbreak and he's not supposed to be. And then the developers would hop on that and would either ban their account or do any of that stuff. But I didn't really get in with the developers until much later into making videos.
Did you think you'd already proven that you were able to create good content and that caught the developer's eye?
Sort of. I think the numbers kind of spoke for themselves. I was really the only one making consistent YouTube content, so I was gaining all of the traction. And like I was saying, I wanted to be in every category. No matter what you search for, I was just building it so when the game blew up, there was no option but for people to find me on YouTube, at least.
And how did you get inspired to do that? Like, how did you know that you could own that search engine?
I don't really know. I watched a lot of Harris Heller and Devin Nash, and I just took a full dive into content, and I knew how algorithms worked sort of from my background. And I knew that when somebody searched for something, that I needed to be the most clickable, right? To be able to pull in the viewers. So I was just like, I need, since it was a small game, I needed to be the biggest YouTube creator for it. In case it didn't work out, I needed to gain as much as I could. So it was my goal. I don't know how the whole taking over every search term really came in, but it was just my goal to make sure that I was the biggest creator for Spellbreak. And that was part of the puzzle.
And were you putting in a grind at this point? Like, when you had this focus, were you like now putting in the hours? Like, I'm going to make this happen.
Yeah, I was probably playing a good like 4 to 8 hours a day. I'm not as much as like a long-term streamer where I feel like I need to sit down and stream 8 hours a day. I'm more of a, I go into my stream with intent for YouTube videos. And then once I get my YouTube video, I'm like, okay, now I'm just kind of streaming for fun. This is extra. So it's always kind of coming down to, I want to get my YouTube stuff done. It's always been a very YouTube centric approach to it.
It brings up that thing we were chatting about just before we started the podcast, which was around, you cannot rely on the platform. If you're just going live on Twitch and you're solely relying on the platform to drive discovery of your content, you're probably going to fail. How important do you think it is for a newer content creator that's just starting to think about off-platform content? Or newer live streamer particularly?
It's everything. I don't think there's ever going to be another streamer that's going to blow up from just streaming, unless they do something really big, like having some type of show or something very, very unique. If you're trying to sit down and play video games and hit start streaming, that in my mind is not productive in terms of reaching your goals.
That is hopefully a very good wake up call for every listener that is just mindlessly going live on Twitch every day or every other day. It's probably not going to work. That's great advice. Did you ever feel like giving up? Barring the times you did give up, which was like way, way back when, but I mean more in the last like 2 years.
Not necessarily. I've definitely taken a step back and slowed down a little bit because I don't want to burn myself out. I know that I want to, I'm kind of in it for the long haul. So I'm not trying to sit down and do 24-hour streams every day and really put 100% effort in all the time. I know I need to take breaks and I know I need to have a life outside of streaming to support my life inside of streaming. So I didn't really think about giving up. I was really just very focused on the fact that this is going to sound weird, but it's really the only way I know how to say it, that nobody cared who I was. And I had to find a way to make content to make them care. And I was just focused on, that's where kind of the search algorithm came in, where it's like, nobody's going to click because my face is on a thumbnail. So I never, up until I think like last week, I had never put my face on a thumbnail because I was just like, people are going to see me. They're going to realize I'm not their favorite streamer. So they're not going to click the video.
But now you're thinking about long-term sustainability and building a relationship with your audience so they actually care about you.
Exactly.
That's great. When you went full-time back in November, what gave you that conviction? A lot of content creators, you know, they've been doing it for years or 6 months, whatever it is, and they may be asking themselves that question. It's like, when is the right time? For you, when was the right time?
Well, I saw that explosion from going from 50 viewers, and then I was up above 1,000 viewers within overnight. As soon as the game dropped, I was just, because the game was down, so there was no way of playing the game. Nobody was playing the game for 2 months. And then, so I was playing off games, like I think Fall Guys was out at the time and other things. And I was pulling in maybe like 10 to 15 viewers that I had kept from Spellbreak. And then as soon as I saw my viewers just explode and my YouTube numbers explode, which actually happened before the game dropped. It was about like a week before, my YouTube numbers just started climbing and climbing and climbing and climbing. And then all of a sudden they just blew up. And that was very obvious to the fact that I had an opportunity on my hands.
That's a really good point. It's like, take advantage of opportunities because they might not always come. So when something is working, double down on it. It's not a chance to like coast. We talked a lot about it in this podcast, but if you reflect back on your journey, and there's listeners out there, and everyone's journey is a little bit different, it's subjective, but for you, what do you think was the contributor to your success so far?
The biggest, as far as just growth, definitely other platforms, YouTube. As of right now, I kind of made like a silent New Year's resolution to start pushing more of my socials as well. But Twitch has always been kind of the cherry on top for me. And I think that's how it needs to be for most people. I think you need to go in and realize that you need to be building everything to push towards your Twitch, because nothing else is going to push towards your Twitch unless you build things to do it.
That's great insight. Marcus, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. Where can people find you when they want to go check out your content after this?
Both on YouTube and Twitch at Marcus, aka Apostle, and also on Instagram and TikTok as well at the same.
Cheers. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me.